Hello, and welcome to this special science podcast from the 2010 AAAS Annual Meeting in San Diego, California. It's February 21st. I'm Robert Frederick. In this short podcast, we'll hear about the spread of behaviors among social networks. The Framingham Heart Study began in the 1940s with over 5,000 people living in Framingham, Massachusetts. The goal of the study, which continues today, is to learn about how cardiovascular diseases arise and evolve in the general population. In the 1970s, researchers enrolled another approximately 5,000 people, children of the original study participants. And in addition to the regular examinations, researchers began to collect data about the participants' social networks, too. In a session titled On the Role of Sleep in Memory, From Development to Old Age, James Fowler of the University of California, San Diego, spoke about social network results from the Framingham Heart Study, as well as unpublished research currently under review about the effects of your sleep on your friends' drug use behavior. After the session, freelancer Michael Torres caught up with Fowler and started by asking him how it is that our friends' behaviors affect us. Here's James Fowler.
We've looked at a wide range of friends' behaviors, and what we find over and over and over again is that it's not just the case that our friends influence us in weight gain, in smoking, in drinking, in how happy we'll be, and whether or not we'll feel lonely, and whether or not we feel depressed, and whether or not we get divorced. It's also our friends' friends, and even our friends' friends' friends that potentially influence those kinds of behaviors and emotional states.
Does the distance between where you live and where your friends live, does that matter?
We have found in a variety of our studies that distance matters for emotions, but not for behavior. And so, for example, in the Framingham Heart Study, when we look at obesity, when we look at smoking, when we look at drinking behavior, your best friend appears to have just as strong an impact on you if they live 1,000 miles away from you as if they live next door. We don't find that's true when we look at happiness, loneliness, and depression. When we look at those outcomes, what we typically find is that your friends who live closer are the ones that are going to have the biggest effect on you. And so what we think is going on here is that when it comes to behaviors, it's really not just about pure imitation. It's not about going down to the bar with your friend or lighting up with your friend, although some of it has got to be that, but it's not just about that. What it really is about is the ideas that you get from your friends about what appropriate behavior is, your norms.
How is it that our friends influence our behavior? What is sort of the mechanism of that?
So we've looked at a lot of different outcomes, and the one that we keep coming back to is the spread of obesity, because that's where we started. And if you can think about, there's lots of different ways that you might be influenced by your friends. So your friends might start eating more, and you might just mindlessly imitate that, because we know from experimental studies, when you're seated next to someone who eats more, you eat more yourself as well. You might also change your ideas about what appropriate body size is. And the interesting thing about that causal mechanism is it doesn't actually have to have an impact on your own body size to spread from person to person to person. So you may have a friend, for example, who gains weight. It changes your acceptance of people with that body size, which then changes how much you bother your other friends, oh, you should go jogging or you should eat less. And so it might skip you. You can be a carrier for, you know, the obesity germ in the same way that you could be the carrier for, you know, a disease, even though you don't express the symptoms of the disease.
So if we want to be, for instance, happier, should we find a happy group of friends?
Yeah, our research actually suggests that what's really important is having lots of friends. And so if your friend becomes unhappy, that's going to have a negative effect on you. But severing a tie to that person is actually worse than experiencing the negative emotions themselves. And so just to give a concrete example, in the Framingham Heart Study, a lot of people thought that when we reported that when your friend becomes obese, it increases the likelihood that you'll become obese, that the message was, I should dump all my fat friends. And that's not true. We actually looked at all of the people in Framingham who had a friend who became obese, and we divided them up into the group of people who kept their friends and the people who dumped their friends. And guess which group actually had a higher risk of obesity? It was the dumpers. So what that suggests to us is that, yes, you can get these negative effects spreading through networks, but the most important thing really is to stay connected.
How do you plan to look at how changes in sleep deprivation or drug use move through a network?
Well, we have research right now that's under review looking at the effect of sleep on your friend's drug use behavior. And what we think we're going to be able to take away from that research is new ways to do experiments on the effect of, say, taking a nap on your friend's drug use behavior. And the real crucial thing here is going to be to connect experiments that are already being done that show that taking a nap gets you lots of different kinds of advantages in terms of how you learn, how you behave, to Facebook, where we're going to have really rich information about your social environment. Because what we'd like to do is know, not just did the person who napped get some kind of benefit, but did that person's friends get some kind of benefit? And so what we'd really like to do going forward is try to figure out, you know, who are these people that you're connected to who also might be able to benefit from something positive that you do in your own life?
So you talked about Facebook. Give us an example of how friends on Facebook can affect us.
Right. So the natural extension from our studies of real-world social networks is try to figure out what's going on online, because I think that's what people are really interested in. Most people never heard of social networks before 2003 when Facebook came online, and now there's a lot of interest because people really engage with these online social networks. And what we find in general is that Facebook friends don't affect you on average, because you have too many of them. In fact, when we published our book Connected, at that time, the average number of Facebook friends was 140. I'm sure the number is much larger now. But these aren't your real friends. These aren't the kinds of people that you would call a friend in real life. And so our real struggle was to try to figure out, well, which of these 140 people are the four or five people that you'd want to be stranded on a desert island with? And the way we do that is by looking to see who uploads pictures of one another and tags them. We call these picture friends. And so for a variety of different outcomes, when we look at all Facebook friends, they don't appear to have an effect on you. But if we look at just the picture friends, they do. And so for example, if your friend posts a smiling profile picture, it increases the likelihood that you'll post a smiling profile picture. And the same can be said in reverse. If they're frowning, you're more likely to frown. We've also started to characterize people's weight using these pictures, which is not the best measure in the world, right? But it's, you can train people to try to evaluate people's body mass index by looking at different pictures, and you get measurements with a certain amount of precision. And there what we find is that there's clustering of overweight men and overweight women in these picture friend networks in the same way that we find clustering of obesity in the Framingham Heart Study.
Thanks for speaking with us today.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
That was freelancer Michael Torres talking with James Fowler of the University of California, San Diego, on the spread of behaviors among social networks. You can find Michael Torres's posting on the session, titled Lack of Sleep is Contagious, as well as the full range of science's coverage of the meeting at news.sciencemag.org. This has been a special science podcast from the 2010 AAAS Annual Meeting in San Diego, California. Special thanks to Marina Giovanelli for her work on this show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write us at sciencepodcast@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Magazine. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, AAAS, the Science Society, thanks for joining us.